You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, Wisconsin consistently gets high marks for having some of the best health care in the country, but many rural residents have difficulty accessing that care. We'll talk with two state lawmakers about legislation being proposed that could help.
Right now, it's time for our check-in on the latest political news out of Washington, D.C. The GOP's revised health care law has many people worried that more people could lose coverage, and President Trump is calling on congressional Republicans to coalesce around a plan.
The Associated Press released a report detailing the news that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort received millions of dollars from a Russian billionaire to promote a pro-Putin agenda. And there's new information from the House intelligence chief over the president's wiretapping allegations.
Paul Singer joins us now. He's Washington correspondent for USA Today. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on this slow news day.
Yeah, not much going on. How about sports? News broke this afternoon. House Intelligence Chair Devin Nunes of California made this announcement. Here's a listen.
So first, I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting. Third, I have confirmed that additional names of Trump transition team members were unmasked. And fourth and finally, I want to be clear, none of this surveillance was related to Russia or the investigation of Russian activities or of the Trump team.
All right, so this is big, Paul. Break it down for us. It sounds like this is incidental, so not that these individuals are being targeted. It's that they had communication with foreign persons who were targeted. Is that right?
Right. That's right. The critical word here is incidental collection. The whole notion is that these people, we don't know who they are, were overheard on wiretaps that were being conducted because of legal spying, basically, by U.S. law enforcement. So, and this is the deal, is that if I call, you know, bad guy X in, you know, wherever a stand, and they're eavesdropping on that call, despite the fact that I'm an American person, I can be picked up in that call. The thing that I think is most concerning for Mr. Nunes is that, in general, the rules are supposed to be that my name then gets blacked out and the collection of information gets eliminated if it has nothing to do with the whatever activity they're trying to pursue. And it sounds like that did not happen, and the names were, as he said, unmasked and then shared amongst other intelligence agencies. So now my name is circulating around on some piece of paper somewhere that's not supposed to be.
This is there's been a lot of reaction to this already, just since this has been announced. The president himself, the House Intelligence Chair Devin Nunes, apparently was going to brief the president. He's done that by now, I think, which you tweeted seemed a bit odd.
Right. Yeah, it's weird because, of course, Mr. Nunes is supposed to be running the investigation of the connections or contacts between Russia and the Trump campaign, that is, between Russian agents and the Trump campaign. Now, what Mr. Nunes has said is that these intercepted communications were unrelated to that investigation. So I think he wanted to just alert the president that some of his team had been picked up on this other surveillance. And Mr. Trump, of course, says he feels vindicated because he was accusing the Obama administration, in fact, President Obama, of wiretapping Trump Tower. That is not what this is. This is not a wiretap of Mr. Trump or his associates by the Obama administration. This is, again, they are incidental contacts. They are being picked up on wiretaps of other people.
We've seen spokespeople for Adam Schiff, the Democratic counterpart of Devin Nunes, on this House Intelligence Committee saying, basically, news to us, we hadn't seen this information.
Yeah, there's some oddities about this whole process, unlike every other day around here these days, where it seems like Mr. Nunes has not disclosed to the Democrats on his committee what exactly is the information he's dealing with, where he's getting it. He says it came from sources. He doesn't explain to us what those sources are. He says we'll find out more on Friday. But again, many questions yet to be answered here, as usual, and yes, it's a little odd.
And this all comes in the backdrop of the testimony earlier this week from the FBI director saying no wiretapping of Trump Tower, no surveillance of the Trump transition or campaign. Yes, ongoing investigation of possible links between Russian intelligence of the Russian state and the Trump campaign. So that was the last big bombshell, I guess, in intelligence this week.
Yeah, they're not bombshells anymore. I mean, there's like one every other day.
Steady drumbeat, yeah.
Drumbeat, I think, is exactly the thing. And again, this raises more questions. Who was it that the Trump people were talking to that the FBI was so concerned about they were listening in?
And then on the Russian connection with the Trump team, this news from the AP looking at Paul Manafort. He was Donald Trump's campaign manager for a few months during the campaign. Looking back 10 years or so now, he had contracted apparently with Russian oligarchs, if people want to call them that, wealthy Russians, for a campaign on behalf to build support for the Putin administration in the United States, in former Soviet republics. What do we know about that?
Not much. I mean, it is worth keeping in mind this was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think what is most interesting about this is that Manafort has said all along that he was not working for Russia and Russian interests. This contract would suggest that he was working at least for a Russian businessman who wanted him to expressly advance Russian interests. So it casts some doubt on Manafort's prior protestations that he was not working for the Russians. But again, this goes back 10 years before the campaign, so it's not clear how much it changes our perception or information about how the campaign was running.
So what are you watching for next in the Russia-Trump campaign open investigation? Are you expecting to see revelations soon, or is this something that's going to be percolating for a long time now?
No, I think, in fact, the funny thing about the way this all played out is that with Mr. Comey's testimony at the beginning of the week, he basically said there is an investigation of the Trump campaign's contacts with Russia, and I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. So it just becomes, as I think Mr. Nunez said, a gray cloud that hangs over the administration. Who knows what we'll find, what we'll hear, when. It could be months. It could be longer. It will simply always be a question mark that, you know, every new email that pops up will be a new story.
Talking to Paul Singer from USA Today about the top news stories from national politics this week. On a normal week, Paul, we're getting now to the stories that would be the top news. Healthcare bill, first and foremost among them. President Trump, full court press here on Republicans in Congress, conservatives in particular, saying, yeah, no, we're not going to vote for this. We've got the votes to block it. Everybody's kind of trying to count the votes here, the whip tally, I think they call it. What are we seeing?
Yep. Well, I don't know. What time is it? I mean, really, we're getting press releases now from members of Congress all over the place saying, yes, I've decided to vote for the bill. No, I've decided not to vote for the bill. And it's just a question of keeping your chalkboard updated. At the moment, what is interesting to me is people like Congressman Lobiondo from New Jersey, a moderate, not a conservative, saying he cannot support this bill because he is concerned about its impact on senior citizens and cutting some of the supports for them that are in the Obamacare bill. That's interesting. The whole argument here has been that the very conservative core of about 30 or 40 members of the Republican caucus might reject this bill because it doesn't go far enough. They said today they think they got 25 votes, which would be enough to kill the bill. It gets harder for the Republicans if they've got a conservative core plus a handful of moderates rejecting the bill. Now you have to really start looking at this count. Do they have enough votes to pass this bill in the House?
And those moderates, more moderate Republicans in Congress in the House, may have more counterparts, it looks like, in the Senate. So even if something can pass the House, it's not a guarantee it's going to pass the Senate, right?
Oh, yeah. This bill's dead in the Senate. I mean, that's a given. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is that the conservatives in the Senate, who oppose this bill, too, have said basically to their, in some cases, have said to the House members, don't walk the plank for a dead bill. Whatever happens in the Senate, they're going to have to rewrite this bill to make it more palatable to moderates. So then you ask this question, well, then what happens when the House gets that back? They didn't like this bill. They're going to hate that one. But it may be their only chance to repeal Obamacare. So what do they do? It's a fascinating calculation that you have to make if you are a conservative member of Congress who's been saying for 10 years, well, 7 years, we're going to repeal this bill.
want to spend a couple of minutes on one of the lesser stories, one of these below-the-fold stories for people who still get print newspapers. The Supreme Court nomination confirmation hearings going on this week. Day three. How are things going today?
It's amazing this is below the fold, by the way. It used to be the name of my bluegrass band. The hearings have been without bombshell, which I think is good news for Mr. Gorsuch. Remember here that the issue for the Democrats is a level of outrage that, you might be able to consider justified that President Obama's nominee never got a hearing at all, and yet here there is a Republican nominee for the same seat, and here they are whistling through these hearings. Basically, you know, the issues with Mr. Gorsuch are ideological ones. There's no one is complaining he's unqualified. No one is complaining that he's a bad human being. What their complaint is that he is, you know, an originalist, a textualist. He believes that he should narrowly interpret the law and the Constitution as written and not extend his hopes and dreams into those documents. And in some cases, that ends up with what Mr. Gorsuch is admitting can be some kind of heartless rulings where you end up saying, sorry, that guy ends up with a bad deal, but that's because the law was written that way, and I can't change the law just to help him out. That's up to Congress. That's really the gist of the debate over the past 2 days. Democrats, again, very unhappy with the whole process, but I'm not sure they're inclined to filibuster, and I'm not sure they've got enough votes to stop them.
We'll leave it there for now. Paul, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Let's hope for more news.
I think we'll not be disappointed. That's Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for USA Today. He joined us to give us some of the latest in the big stories in national politics.
Coming up after the news, we'll learn about new legislation aimed at improving health care access in rural Wisconsin. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.